Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. My name's Stephen Jones from the Sunday Times. Welcome to our weekly episode of The Ruck. Thank you very much for listening to us. Thank you for pushing our numbers sky high. Really appreciate it. And to Jill and Donald, who I met in the Walter Kerr Theatre on Friday evening. Hi, and thank you for listening to The Ruck. And I think we agree that what we heard on Friday evening is something beyond even the greatness of The Ruck. And in fact, beyond anything that any of us had ever heard before. So
beyond The Ruck,
almost. So to Bruce on Broadway.
You've really started out on a limb today, Steve.
No, you can't go beyond the boss. He's right.
To Bruce on Broadway, Bruce, as it said in the reviews, it was like you were talking to each member of the individual audience. It certainly felt
Bruce
like you were
Craig
talking to me.
Went to hear.
Bruce Forsyth.
All right.
Our guest today, our panel today, it's a very high-powered panel. In fact, it's one of the biggest we've had since last time I was on the panel. We've got Owen Slott, the rugby correspondent of The Times, the reigning champion in the competitive rugby journalist of the year stakes. And he's got the title for 1 year till it goes back to its more natural home. We've also got Mark Evans. Last time he was on, we still can't really work out the big numbers, why there are such big numbers when he comes on. Basically, I was not to reason why. Mark, which sports have you taken over since you were last on? You've taken over netball since you were last on.
No, we're consolidating at
okay.
the moment. Netball, rugby league, rugby union, pretty much.
Okay, now you're also responsible for making a huge occasion out of the European Champions Cup final in Newcastle. Well, I'm sure you can't give us any details, but how's that going? Because that's huge.
Really good. Yeah, I mean, myself and Mick Hogan and a bunch of other people, yeah, we're really pleased. It's going to be a great event. It'll be sold out.
Right.
And, you know, we're really working hard now on the Friday night Challenge Cup numbers. So, you know, because that needs to be turned into a bigger event as well. We've got to turn that into a, you know, two-day rugby weekend, in preferably in non heartland markets like Bilbao and Newcastle and stuff. It's one of the things you do to help grow the game.
You do, and Newcastle is it's got a certain kudos and a certain charm about it. You know, and so you're cashing in on that.
A lot of people come for the weekend. If you haven't bought your tickets yet, hurry up. Never miss an opportunity. But no, it's a great place for a rugby weekend of either code. And the champions, you know, the Heineken Champions Cup final and the Challenge Cup final, you know, they're becoming bigger and bigger. It's still a long way to go. You know, some of the crowds this weekend were pretty ordinary, to be honest, amongst the extraordinary thing at Racing that I'm sure we'll mention. Yeah, but the finals weekend has got a lot of opportunities.
Good. And our third panellist today, Steve James, making a rare insertion from cricket. And deciding to get his boots dirty for a change, as they used to be when he was fullback at Lydney. Steve, you've been away at another sport. Did it become your favourite sport, or is rugby still your number one?
That's good to be here, Steve. Yeah, I was in Sri Lanka for a month or so. Rained a lot, saw a bit of cricket, but yeah, no, enjoyed it. Yeah, rugby is still my passion. I'm from the Forest of Dean, after all. It's
right.
A bit more of a rugby area than a cricket area. But yeah, it was good to come out, and then covered Wales in the autumn. So and just done a bit of club rugby since. I had the misfortune of covering Bath against Sale the weekend before last.
Cool. Right, he's only been back 2 weeks. He's whinging already.
Well, I mean, that was probably in the worst.
If anyone saw Bath v Sale, they would empathise. Worst
10 games ever I've seen, I reckon. Definitely in the top 10.
Well, that's
a good list, isn't it? Should we do that?
Worst games.
Worst games you've ever seen.
Cardiff Connacht, 3-3 many years ago.
Okay, don't forget there was a Wales England international that ended 0-0 at one stage.
I bet you that was a better game than Barcelona.
Wales Scotland.
Thank God.
Wales Scotland 3-0, 1965. Clive Rowlands. Yes.
No, 6-3.
The 111 lineouts one.
Something like that.
111 lineouts.
111 lineouts in 80 minutes. How can you do that?
Marvellous.
These days it takes you 10 minutes to get one lineout.
You've got to kick the ball out quite a lot.
On
the full.
Steve, you can confine your comments to just a general impression, but English cricket, the team, is it now rising again?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Test side did well, didn't they, beating Sri Lanka, but Sri Lanka aren't the best, I don't think.
What happens to the fast bowlers? Because they know, are they starting to creak, Broad and Anderson?
Well, I mean, they're getting on a bit, aren't they? But I think they'll make the Ashes next summer, and then after that, I think you might have to start asking those sort of questions.
Okay.
The trouble with that is not to dwell on this a bit, but beating Sri Lanka in Sri Lanka is nothing like playing Australia on a slightly different pitch. So
yeah, still not many Test series wins in the subcontinent.
It's a good effort, but yeah, I'm still not sure what the side will be for the Ashes, especially the top three. Anyway, on to rugby.
If you have to cover rugby, cricket or the Tour de France, which would you do?
Rugby. But I do like cycling as well.
No, I know that's your passion.
So if there's any sports editors out there listening to this.
Yeah. The king of the freelancers.
It doesn't take as long.
Just a very quick point for all our ruckers out there and maybe the panel. Tell me what these people have in common. Mark Evans, who, sparing his blushes, is one of the most successful, driven and inspired and visionary in terms of growing the game, creating new stadiums, creating new teams, boosting up the number of people who go to that team, etc. Edward Griffiths, who is actually in the same category as it was inspirational in charge of Saracens, was the man who created the One Nation stuff around the South African team in the 1995 World Cup. Sir Clive Woodward, who won the world title and whose England team dominated the world game. Ben Ryan, who was the English coach in charge of the gold medal run by the brilliant Fijians. Catherine Spencer, who is the most dominant personality in the women's game. Many, many Welsh players on the fringes, and Brian O'Driscoll. What have these people got in common? And the answer is,
they're all in your intro.
They're all in my intro. The game is decided that these giants, and I mean giants, all except Mark, who's not a giant,
no,
but he is in the
not
in the physical sense, but he is, as a former hooker, he couldn't be. But none of these people who are outrageously successful have been asked to take a top role in rugby. And if you're telling me that rugby has enough good people to ignore that lot, well, it's lunacy. So in other words, all that stuff he earned goes out with him.
The point about Mark,
don't know about me
here, is you say he's not been put into the top job, but the top job's available, isn't it?
Yep.
So we were on this Ruck podcast about 3 weeks ago. We had Michael Liner in here, and we say, Michael, you should be the next CEO of the RFU.
Mm.
And now that Michael's not in here, we can change our minds and go for our next guest, Mark Evans.
That's very kind.
Do you mind that?
Do I mind what?
What, being our second nomination for RFU
second,
Chief Executive?
Second in a long list, I expect. Yeah, but that's fine.
No, but this week you're our first.
Okay, well, thanks. Steve? Very,
well,
very
I
kind.
Have to say, that's why I started thinking along those lines. And someone like Danielle Waterman. Is Danielle, and all her influence and all her brilliance and success, going to be allowed to leave the game? It's just nuts. The European Champions Cup. This morning, the Times had what amounted to an inquest on the English teams in it. Not very good, and slightly bore up my impression that the money is so huge in the French League and the Premiership, and the need to avoid relegation and to get into the top six to qualify for Europe, that actually they're not that bothered. Some of the teams are not as bothered as they were about the tournament. Owen, Racing Leicester, you were in Paris yesterday. That's one of the teams that is now very, very unlikely to qualify. Were Racing good, and were Leicester as bad as they have been lately?
Racing were very good, but they have a team, so they have a game that's perfectly tailored to their fantastic new stadium, this indoor sort of futuristic U arena, now called the Paris La Défense Arena, which is very catchy title. So Racing are good, and they've got a ton of good players. Leicester have been really struggling of late, and they weren't terrible yesterday. They were actually pretty good. When we're in Europe and we're talking about Leicester being plucky losers, consolation, bonus points and stuff, but it's kind of weird, isn't it? I mean, yeah. Leicester should be winning these things, contending. I never thought they were going to win. They might have got a losing bonus point as well as their fourth.
Never thought. Quarter. Never looked like winning, do they?
No. I think Racing could have gone on a gear if they had to. So Leicester, as you say, hang on by a thread. I'd be absolutely gobsmacked if they qualified.
Mark, all of us have grown up in an era where Leicester, for them to reach second place in the table and lose the final by one point, was regarded as a disaster. Now they lose at home frequently, and they're not going to qualify in Europe. Did you ever think we'd see that? And what's gone wrong with them?
Cool. How long you got? Leicester had huge advantages in the amateur and semi-pro, this transitional phase, which was the huge membership, biggest crowds, a lot of revenue, largest turnover in the league. Still are, actually. But the gap between them and some of the others has closed financially. And that comes down to resources and facilities, which they were always top of the log, and they're pretty much along with a lot of other teams now. And then, therefore, it becomes, which is good, by the way, it's a good thing, not a bad thing. Then it becomes down to, have you quite got your culture right? Have you got the right balance in your squad? Have you got the age profile right? Have you got a whole load of other things right? And at the moment, partly through luck, which in a close league is always a big thing. So they've got a lot of he's been out for God knows how many years. They've got a lot of injuries. And the odd poor recruit, you get your balance slightly wrong, you go to the bottom half. That's it. And it happens in France too. You know, Toulon are running 10th. Montpellier are running 9th. They've not suddenly lost a load of resource. It's just that other teams, La Rochelle, for example, Clermont are top because they're not in Europe. So the margin for error is really very, very small.
When you say that, you talk about culture, and then you say, if you can make one wrong signing. Are you saying that culture is not a word people use and don't really understand, but it really is a vital aspect?
It's critical. Absolutely critical. If your culture is right, you can massively you can be bigger than some of your parts. And if it's wrong, you can have a rock star team on paper and really underperform. It's an intangible thing, but it's like that fantastic quote back in the 50s, wasn't it? An obscenity trial when the judge said, I can't define obscenity, but I know it when I see it. And it's like cultures like that. It's very hard to put into words. But you know when you're in the middle of a really positive culture, and you know when you're in a one that is really not great, and you always eventually in the long run see it on the pitch.
Put it in very simple terms, isn't it? Because they haven't got a real nasty pack anymore. I mean, there was that time there were those problems, weren't there, when Cockerell was in charge. He wanted to play the old way, didn't he? The old Leicester way, and everyone else seemed to want to play this all dancing. New modern game, and they got a bit confused, and around that time they lost a big hard pack. And have they ever really got that back?
I totally agree with that.
People don't fear going to.
I agree with both. It's almost like the same.
The hard pack has been the history of their culture.
I'm not sure you can play like that anymore. Can you? I mean, all I'd say about that is, like whom? What the game's changed and. Where are the teams that rely on the old? I'm going to sound about 88, but I apologise. You know, the old Leicester, you go back, the Pontypool team, the Neath team of the 80s, when, you went down there and you knew it was going to be, you had to win the fight first before you could play any rugby. You can't play like that anymore.
Aren't Gloucester a bit better now because they're a bit harder?
I agree.
Well, more powerful, I'd say.
Mark, I think it is still open to you. The laws and the way the game is, it is still open to you to play in that way.
Isn't it just it's a different sort of a fight? You can't win the fight.
It's a different sort of fight.
I think Exeter win the fight on the whole when they...
Yeah, I was going to say Exeter.
Yeah, all right. So we're saying, have Leicester got a pack that can win enough collisions, yeah, which is what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
basically, yeah.
That's a different thing. No, they probably haven't at the moment.
Do you know what? I think that France have woken up, and woken up by maybe one guy, Demba Bamba. In the World Under-20s, they suddenly turned the clock back 20 years and they smashed the All Blacks to smithereens up front in the primary phase. Anyway, just go on, just carry on.
Which is what Ireland did to the All Blacks when
exactly,
the Ireland 14.
Exactly.
I think what I was trying to say, Mark, was, you know, you've got to win the physical collisions.
Oh, yeah, and you can't win a game of modern rugby if you don't win collisions. Exactly. You just can't. Well, I mean, rarely. Yeah.
Steve, when this season started, Saturday's the weekend, match on the weekend between Saracens and Cardiff. Right. Cardiff were meant to be real contenders this year, new coach, which we'd all heard of, called John Murray Mint or something.
Mulvihill.
We'd all
Australian
heard of him. but when it came to the game, it looked like Saracens were going to win, and Saracens did win by 50. What were your impressions?
Well, I mean, the first thing to say, Cardiff did have quite a few players out. I think they had about 9 players out, and that is one of the big problems with Welsh regions.
They haven't got the depth to
cope with that, and they were missing some big names. Fair enough, Saracens were missing some players as well, but they got the depth to cope with it. In fairness, I thought Cardiff did really well in that game. I mean, they're ahead at half-time. I know they had the win, but they scored a couple of cracking tries in the first half.
That Michael Morgan try was sensational.
Michael, he ran from his own half. So they were in front, but then the win second half, and Saracens had a much stronger bench. So, yeah, it probably went as I thought it would.
But Cardiff not at the place where they're asking themselves, do we want to pour all our resources into having a game against Saracens when we can't qualify? I mean, almost like Steve's saying, it's that you're in Europe and you're being penalised for it, so why not work on your league game instead?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's true for Cardiff. I speak as a Cardiffian. I think for the it's important for the Welsh teams that they do perform well in the Heineken, because it is undoubtedly the biggest games of their seasons. When the Scarlets went to the semi-final last year,
it was huge.
Completely reignited the Western area of Wales. I mean, because it had been so long. I mean, look, we all know the thing with the Welsh regions. They're operating under much lower budgets. Therefore, it's incredibly unromantic. The reason they haven't got as much depth is that their wage bill is a lot lower.
It's no more complicated than that.
Steve, I know Cardiff have a lot of players up there, but there was no Billy, there was no Cruz. And whether or not Cardiff still think they can qualify, whether or not, surely there's two lessons from the forthcoming game, and that is surely they're going to give it everything in front of their own crowd,
because it might not
give them any league points at the end of the day. But secondly, doesn't this show us something that Peter Thomas once said to me? He said, sometimes I look around and wonder, in our league games, why are we playing Italy, Scotland and Irish teams? Why don't we play the teams that the fans want to see? And that's what I mentioned earlier. Saracens,
I think it's an absolute tragedy there's not an Anglo-Welsh league. I'd be interested in Mark's view on that. I mean, being involved.
Well, as the principal competition?
Yeah. Why not?
Mark, over to you.
I wouldn't, because I think that would put the other European countries in an incredibly difficult position, and the game in Scotland and Ireland and Italy would shrink, because you actually haven't got a critical mass. If you're going to go for an integrated approach across Europe, you go for two leagues. I think, by the way, I think this ship has sailed. This was on the table about 20 years ago in the late 90s.
When they had the rebel season.
No, a bit late than that. It never came public. It was on the table. Well, I remember seeing a paper.
If Sunday Times is not public, fair enough.
I know the one you mean, but a 16-team British league in maybe two conferences might work, but I think that ship sailed. I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Okay, well, it is desperate
shame,
for Welsh
it
clubs.
It is a shame, isn't it? Don't you think? Mm. It's a shame.
Well, it's certainly
massive. Yeah.
I think you've got to be careful of Welsh bias here, because I think the country that suffers most from that is Wales, whereas it's hard to see how Ireland are suffering from the current structure. Mm. And actually, you look at the Scottish franchises, I was looking at this last night, you know, preparation, and I reckon they're both going to get through to the quarters. I think Edinburgh and Glasgow will both qualify, and therefore would that be the first time ever? So it's
definitely.
It's hard to argue if it's working so well for Ireland and Scotland, who have both probably got their strongest national teams for a good wee while, to say the whole thing is a shambles just because it isn't suiting Wales, which it clearly doesn't, I'm not sure that stands up intellectually.
Well, you say it doesn't suit Wales, but at the same time, Wales have got a stronger national team as they've had.
Well, there we are.
I mean, that's another because everyone argues against the regions, but since the regions came in 2003, I mean, the national team has been...
Yeah, everyone forgets how terrible the Welsh national team were in the 80s.
Wooden Spoon, I think, in 2003, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, go back. I mean, you look at when the game went pro... Everyone always forgets this too. You look at Ireland's record, everyone says, oh, professional's been brilliant for Ireland. Go and have a look at 95 to 2001.
Rubbish.
Terrible.
Yeah. Hey, go and have a look at the crowds of these four useless lumps of Wales. Amorphous lumps of Wales, slashed on a map by some idiot Kiwi. And tell me that's any good. The Dragons, Ospreys,
but it has been good for the national team, though, isn't it? You can't deny that.
Well,
the national team since region.
You're in danger of confusing correlation and causation.
Gatland has been good for the national team. No one watches rugby apart from the national team anymore. And it's sad. I remember walking across Newport Bridge with my dad, and it was like 10 abreast, and you had to get there an hour and a half before, and you still never get a good place to stand.
But it'll be full at the Arms Park on Saturday for the Saracens. Which goes back to our original point, I suppose.
Well, yes, it does. Okay.
There's a whole load of factors that play in the decline in attendances in Welsh. And one of the reasons I would point out, people bang on about how big the attendances were back in the day. And I was, you know, one of those kids who stood on the terraces. Actually, some of them were dreadful. They were dreadful.
Even in the 90s,
rose-tinted spectacles here. And some of the data just doesn't back that up.
I agree with that.
Well, if they were worse than they get now, well, there'd be a minus figure there.
Yeah, well, it was always rock solid Abertillery, wasn't it?
Did I send us off as a tangent here, Steve?
Not at all. Sorry, what sport were we discussing? I think you've probably said enough, but I'm actually one more question.
Is he dismissed from the rest of the podcast? Yeah. thanks for coming, Mark.
Thanks.
You can come back in 2 weeks' time when we're doing our Christmas special.
Good. Let's just all talk about a key one. Wasps to lose, Mark. Wasps seem to played it pretty well, but every time I see Wasps, I think who's this guy? They played at Fly Half. They've got at Fly Half. They paid a massive amount of money from. What's he doing there? And what's happening to Wasps?
Yeah, I'm worried about Wasps. In all seriousness, a couple of years back they were playing sensational, and we all know that defensively they maybe weren't quite up to the very very best, but my God, they were easy on the eye, and I watched the game on the weekend, and Toulouse weren't that good. You know, apart from, of course, the legend that is Chesley Cobley. He is I'd pay money just to go and watch him. He's like, you know, when Hunter Davis talked about Glenn Hoddle at Tottenham in another sport, he said, I'd go to the warm-up just to watch him. I'd go early just to watch him warm up. I'd go and pay for watch that guy if he's playing. He is just such a talent. But other than him, Toulouse were okay. They weren't brilliant. They scored the first two times. They went in the 22. But Wasps, they've lost a lot of pace. They've lost Wade. They've lost the scrum halves. They had a couple of kids playing scrum half.
Simpson.
Yeah, and both injured. So they lose a lot of pace at nine. They've got no Gopeth for the season. That's a huge list. Yeah. And they swapped Sobanga for Cipriani, and they do not.
Made to look worse because of Gopeth.
And at the scrum half as well. Yeah. So, and no Wade outside.
Yeah.
And so you've lost a team that relied on pace has lost quite a lot of pace, and he may well be one of those overseas players who just doesn't look great season one. There have been loads who just don't look very good. Willie LaRue didn't look fantastic.
He took a year.
And now he looks terrific. But at the minute, Wasps, if there's a lot of rumours swirling around the circuit about Wasps at the minute, both on and off the field. And
well, the players aren't happy with the training facilities, are they?
Apparently. Well, I think we're going back to this culture thing. I think they've still got a lot of good players there. But I don't think there's this essential feeling of we love what we're doing and we're proud to be here, because they're not excited to be there anymore because the promises that they were made haven't been fulfilled. Mm. You talk about the training ground in particular. Mm, yeah. They were told, you go to Coventry, we're going to build this magnificent training ground. Mm. It's going to be, you know, we are going to be the A1 team to be with. And they've been there 4 years or something now, and it hasn't come to fruition.
Let's talk about one more, slightly more specific. Gloucester are now at the top of their top position for about 8 years in the league. Every time I've seen them, it's like Bradman, I only watch him when he's not going 100. But Cipriani has been easily the most creative and incisive player and the most exciting player in the Premiership. Swap for Sopoanga. Is that currently looking at the worst swap since in the history of rugby?
Well, it doesn't look great, but I've seen bits of Sopoanga playing well. He hasn't recently. I wouldn't write him off as a bad deal at all, but it does look a bit humiliating when you then look at how well Cipriani's been playing for Gloucester. I get that completely. I also think that when they let Danny go, because Dai Young, he made no effort to keep him at all, did he? I mean, he just said, right, that's your contract done and I'm not going to pay you anymore and you can go and find something else. Dai Young thought there'd be a happier place without him, and I don't know if that's happened, but it doesn't appear to have done.
No, it's hard to know without knowing the internal workings of it, there's a number of things that often happens. It's come together at WAS, I think, in the last 12 months, and it's they're still not a bad side. They're not. They still have flashes of really good play, and as you say, they've got some very, very good play. I mean, Nathan Hughes went off on the weekend, and it looked serious to me. It's one of those where he got injured, he tried to play on, and then he came off. That's often not a very good sign, and there's another go-forward guy. You know, so now you haven't got him for a while. You're starting to think, ooh, hello.
Launchbury wasn't playing, was he?
No, Launchbury wasn't playing.
The cynic in me, when all that happened at WAS, it was almost too good to be true at the time, wasn't it? Hmm. Don't you think? Everything that was going on there, you was just looking at it and thinking, this is amazing, yeah. Is this real and can it last? That was always my worry.
I think the ultimate sign of that club has issues is that Elliot Daly, who came up through their academy, he's played there all his life, he got his England caps through learning the game there. The news that he is on the verge of leaving for Saracens, the enemy, if you like. And what does that tell you? That tells you that it's not all good.
Well, it tells you, first of all, he's been mucked around to high heaven by Eddie Jones, mind. And he's looking like a fish out of water. But I have to say this. Victory makes things look a lot better. And their injury list is absolutely savage. Mm. It really is savage. Just go on to some of the other English clubs. Leicester are unlikely to qualify. Saracens almost certainly will. Yeah. Exeter would turned over. But Gloucester, their chance is now minimal. Gloucester, if they realise that when they play at home to Munster, that they're playing a team where if they fight as hard as Munster do, they'll beat Munster because Munster are no good as a rugby team. they've got every chance. But Gloucester, are they genuinely coming through at last?
I think so. I mean, the incredible thing about that win was they didn't even pick their full strength side to win that game down there. Ed Slater has been brilliant for me. He didn't play, did he? Woodward didn't start.
Woodward came on in the end.
They've got some of their South African signings are just coming through, aren't they? So Jacko Creel hasn't played much either. No.
I tell you the guy I want to shout out, though. I mean, I know England have got a lot of strength in the back three. Ollie Thorley. Lord. Yeah. I mean, the kid's been out for a year with an injury until, you know, this season. And I just happened to have caught him three or four times. I don't know why. I like watching Gloucester play. I think they're a good team. He is just something.
Yeah, I mean, who did he score that try against that Kings on when Ben Morgan threw that?
Four of them. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that against Exeter, I mean, he turned the game. That bust up he made and then went through the two of them and powered out and offloaded it to Hines. That turned the game nothing.
I just don't understand Exeter in the Champions Cup, though. They just seem to play differently, don't they?
They've never competed.
Did you see Kvesic kick ahead? I mean, he basically
into Thorley. Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
I mean, but they never do that sort of thing, do they? I mean, that's the whole thing, isn't it? They keep the ball, don't they?
I think they keep
the ball away.
We'd certainly keep the any discussion of the Exeter demise on hold for a few more weeks.
It's not. They're not.
What I'm saying, I just don't understand. They seem to be a different beast, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Compared to the Premiership, for whatever reason.
They do.
There's a different mindset.
And they always have been, Steve.
Why, though? Can you explain?
No, I can't. Honestly, but they have.
Strange,
they've
isn't
all it? They've always struggled. Never played that great. Newcastle. Should they beat Toulon at home and they beat him away? Newcastle got a great chance. It'd be a great moment for you, Mark, for your new Geordie friends. But wouldn't that be lovely? Wouldn't that be lovely if they qualified?
Yeah, and again, this happened. This didn't used to happen, did it? Dean took. He left a lot of people out at the weekend. You know, who were fit.
Yeah.
Almost as if, well, if we get a bonus point in Edinburgh, it'll be okay. But as long as we beat them at home, because they've already won an away game. Now, he is one of the shrewdest rugby brains around, so I'm not going to second guess him. But I mean, that they put up a good battle. But Edinburgh, who played a very, very Richard Cockerell type game, it was pretty.
As we were saying,
it was pretty low risk until they got a little bit of daylight, and then they turned it on a bit.
But let's be fair. You saying that Glasgow and Edinburgh got a great chance
to qualify.
Leinster coming through, obviously on excellent form, and that's a good thing, because there was a time when it was an English French monopoly.
Yes.
No, it isn't. We'd love love one Welsh team to come through, but that's not going to happen this year. We'd love one to qualify.
No chance.
Ireland are going to get three, I think.
Ireland could well get three, because it could well get three.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, we move on to conclude today's ruck with the key moment, nominations of our god or goddess of the week. Casting vote lies with the chairman, that's me. But we'll start off with Steve James making a rare appearance from cricket. Your god of the week, Steve.
Well, I'm going for a weird one here. If anyone saw the coverage of Exeter against Gloucester, one of the pundits was Ollie Woodburn. Who was injured? Did anybody see what he was wearing?
Yes.
If
what was he wearing?
Who did he think he looked like?
I don't know whether it was a bet or whether he's quite a snappy dresser. So he had this wide brim black hat on.
Oh yes.
He had this
felt black hat. It was...
Felt. Yeah. Then he had this winter coat. He had leather gloves on, didn't he? And then the big white roll neck sweater. I mean, if you haven't seen it, you need to look.
Right.
It was absolutely incredible.
Is this the twerp of the week or the god?
Well, I don't know. He impressed me.
Between us, do we think that that's snappy dressing or, as you say, is it a fine from the club?
I genuinely thought it was a bet, yeah.
All right, well, it may have been a bet, but he was out there wearing a big hat and all that. So
because we're so fashion aware, we really know the answer to this, don't we?
Oh, Ollie Woodburn. Okay,
the
sorry.
From,
I know.
Used to play for Bath, now an extra.
Yeah, he had a big brown thing on. Yeah, Ollie Woodburn. First nomination for ludicrous get-up is Ollie Woodburn.
Oh, Ugo.
From
the
that fashion giant Steve James. Mark?
Can I choose an inanimate object?
This is getting inanimate.
An inanimate.
Well, the question is God inanimate?
Well, quite, so I will.
Okay.
I will choose La Défense Stadium.
Okay.
Which I've got to say, it's just fabulous. You were there, weren't you? I just love it.
Yeah,
it's indoors. It's got this huge screen. It's lights. It's action. It's entertainment. It's got 30,000 seats. I mean, wouldn't it be just fabulous if rugby could be played in stadiums like
this
that?
This is the man with the vision of the future.
Yeah, that's right.
Just.
So we're heaven of the week.
Absolutely. It looked wonderful on TV. It appeals to a much younger demographic, which is really important for team sports. I just thought, I know it can't be done financially, but hats off to Racing. That I just thought it was sensational.
Hats up, right? That's two strong ones there.
Ollie Woodburn's hat off.
Yeah.
So my God of the week is a player who thrives in the aforementioned indoor stadium. Leone Nakarawa.
Oh, yes.
What a lovely, wonderful player. But on a hard surface, when their ball's always dry, I mean, he's playing a cross between rugby and basketball, maybe closer to basketball sometimes. Phenomenal pace, extraordinary hands. There's one point where Tuilagi scored a try and he just about gassed him on the outside. And I thought it was
the winger.
I thought it was the winger he was going around, but it was actually Nakarawa. I mean, it's just a joy to watch.
Lovely
to watch him yesterday.
Okay, well mine is obvious. He's not
Bruce Springsteen
in rugby, but at least he's not inanimate either. He's alive. And I'm sure you readers and listeners, you let me have Bruce Springsteen this week because...
I was joking.
No, because it is just something that is so beyond words, beyond sport. I left the Walter Kerr Stadium on Broadway with tears in my eyes. It was just, and that's the honest truth. But bearing in mind, it's supposed to be probably meant to be a rugby player who is alive and not inanimate. It's between Leone Nakarawa and Ollie Woodburn, and I have to say, for the sheer ludicrousness of Ollie Woodburn's supposed get-up, God of the Week is the great fashionista Ollie Woodburn.
Oh, he'd be so proud.
He will be delighted.
I'm very proud of him.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to us. Thank you for downloading us. We'll be back next week in Christmas week. Thanks for listening to The Ruck. See you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.